We are very privileged to have one of the new authors of a book, although I don't think it's a new book that he's authored. It's an older book, I suspect, but it's been published in English for the first time. It was originally published in Dutch, and so Reverend Vergunst has, on his travels from New Zealand, he's pastoring a church in New Zealand, he's in the area, and he agreed to bring before us in this night this message on empathy grown in valleys of grief. Reverend Vergunst, it's a joy to have you here, and we pray that God will richly bless you as you bring the truth of his word to us in this evening hour. Welcome.
Well, it is a privilege that I was invited to be here. And I think the conference organizers felt it was a good opportunity to rein me into this event, or whether this event was reined into my presence here, doesn't matter. Thank you for being here. I'm sure we're all here because we have somehow intersected already in the journey of grief. I just want to read a short passage of the Book of Lamentation to you, chapter 3, as a little introduction to our subject tonight. Lamentations is a book about grieving and about loss and about being puzzled, bewildered, I suppose, that Jeremiah was at time, because God's providence didn't make any sense. And we all have that sometimes, don't we? That we wonder, why is God allowing that in my life? And Jeremiah is reflecting on all what God has done in chapter 3. And you notice if you read this chapter, he doesn't make any mention of the Babylonians, who entirely destroyed the city. He doesn't make mention of the Jews who've made their life, his life, miserable. He notices that all those are secondary causes. But there's a primary cause. God has led me into this journey. And then in verse 32 and 33, he says, and there's a recovery in this chapter as he comes to verse 21, and this I recall to mind. I'm not going to read all that. Just want to read verse 32 and 33. For though he cause grief, notice what it says, though he cause grief. Though he cause grief, yet will he have compassion according to the multitude of his mercies, for he does not afflict willingly, nor grieve the children of men. He causes grief. He afflicts. He causes the children of men to grieve. And this is hard for you and me, isn't it? To accept sometimes. We look always at the secondary causes. It was a brain tumor that took my wife. It was a post-operation complications that took my father. It was an accident that laid my foster daughter in coma with permanent brain damage. Right? Secondary causes. But all above that, Jeremiah says he caused grief. Now that's an astounding confession. And dear friends, this is something that you may also grapple with to come to terms with. But when you go back in the Bible and we come to Genesis chapter 3, you notice when God said to Adam and to Eve, what was the result of their sin? He says, and the ground will bring forth thorns and thistles. Now, if you come to my garden, there are a few thorns and thistles, but they're mostly flowers. And when I look around here, I see thorns and thistles, but I mostly see pretty trees and beautiful flowers. And here and there, there are some thistles. It's not only thistles, it's not only thorns. You say, yeah, where are you going with this? I'm going here. Grief, sorrow, loss. It's going to be unavoidable to you and me. You had it, you have it, or you will have it. There is no life on earth that's not going to intersect with this journey of affliction and grief and loss. Either you've been through it, either you're going through it, or you will go through it. God said that. He said to Adam and Eve, before they fell, you eat of that tree, you will die. He married sin with suffering. We sowed the thorns and the thistles. He sows more flowers among them. And you know, this is for me a defining moment in my life. And I think back probably 10 years ago when I sat across of an old Chinese pastor. This was after I lost my wife. And as we were chatting together, he frankly said to me, he says, most of you Christians in the West, you got it all wrong. You got your definitions wrong. And you know, I'm being a Western Christian, something begins to boil in me. I said, now what do we have wrong? Like, I'm going to defend myself right away instead of humbly listening to him. And so I came across perhaps a little bit cocky and says, well, what do we have wrong? He says, you know, brother, most Christians in the West, they call what is normal abnormal and what is abnormal normal. I said, I don't get it. Will you explain this? He says, ever since Genesis 3, suffering is normal. No suffering. No loss, no grief is abnormal. And I was silenced, like you perhaps were. I said, thank you, brother. I said, I hope I will never forget this moment. And remind myself daily, when I have a beautiful day with beautiful flowers, with joy and pleasure, with having an embrace of my wife or having a hug from my children, and sharing time of joy, that is an abnormal day. And when we experience frustrations and we experience loss and we experience pain and we are to refrain from a hug or can no more do that, that is normal. I tell you, my friends, that turned my world upside down. And I hope tonight that you also will walk away saying, Lord, help me never to forget. Once we get that, the question of suffering. Why do good men and good people suffer? Or why does this happen in my life? It's not quite as a big of a question anymore. You know what's a bigger question? Why do I not suffer more? Why do I still have so much good? Why do I still have so many beautiful things in my life? That's a bigger dilemma. For that unfolds before us the greatness of our God, who daily is offended by my sin, your sin, who daily is grieved when he looks down upon us and see how we have marred and twisted his beautiful image with which we were created, and how we live out the brokenness of our brokenness in more brokenness. And still pours upon us abnormally his goodness. And see, then when Jeremiah is expounding here the journey he's been making through all his sorrow, he says, but he caused grief. Indeed, he does cause grief, and he does afflict, and he does do that, but not willingly, he says. Now, if you take the word in the Hebrew, it says he doesn't afflict from the heart. And if you're a parent, you understand that. There are times that your child can get a warning, and they get a warning and they ignore it, and you give them another warning, they ignore it again. And then they give a third time they transgress. It's time for you to discipline them and to take out the rod and to give them a reminder through some pain. If you keep going this way, things get worse. You see, that's the word not willingly. When we give that pain, or we give this grief, or we make our children lose out something, we also hurt. Our hearts pained. And now Jeremiah is standing before all the chaos of providence that he has gone through in his lifetime. Says he does cause grief, but not willingly. One exception. And it pleased Jehovah to grieve, to bruise his own son. And he went to every grief. Tonight I was asked to speak to you about what has grown or what may grow in the valley of grief. And I have chosen to speak about empathy. There's no debate needed about who is the most empathetic person in the world, or at least presently not in the world, in his human nature. But Jesus Christ is. He is the most compassionate and the most understanding. Hebrews 4 verse 15 tells us we don't have a high priest who cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. So we take out the negatives. It says we have a high priest who can be touched with the feeling of our infirmities. For he was in all points tempted like we are, yet without sin. And who led him through all those temptations? His Father. His Father did lead him through the grief, the sorrow, the suffering, the loss, the pain, the despair, the loneliness, the forsakenness. All of that his Father did to him. Just as Jeremiah said, Jehovah led me through this and that He hedged my way about. He shut out my prayer. Or he wasn't, you know, as Jeremiah just unfolds the suffering, he's constantly looking up and says, Jehovah did this. And so did the Son of Man. He understood it wasn't Pilate, and it wasn't the Jews, and it wasn't anybody else but his Father. Father, if it be possible, take this cup from me. He saw that it was no one else but the Father who gave him this again. This last part of the cup he had to drink came out of the same hand of all the other drinks he had out of that cup already, as his Father let him, sent him into the world, commanded him to go into that world, and to become united in the sufferings and the sorrows and the afflictions that we humans caused ourselves. He didn't. But he entered intimately into the journey of our suffering. And that's what made Jesus empathetic. I want to define the word sympathetic and empathetic briefly to you. Sympathetic is someone who shows you his care, and he shows you his loving feelings to you. You know, we are expressing that sometimes when we are visiting with the bereaved. We share our sympathy with them. Beautiful. But empathy goes far deeper. Empathy is someone who has the ability to understand. He has the ability to share your feelings because he's been there. And we have an high priest in heaven who's been there. He understands. Without you having to say a word, he knows. Jesus is not a clinical theorist, you see. He's also not a learned counselor. He's not just an experienced expert doing his duty. He is one who lived along with the miseries of mankind. He has suffered in the temptations, in the rejections, in the afflictions. He's tasted every sorrow. He's been qualified, the scripture tells us, through suffering. It is almost a puzzling statement to us as we read it at first. In Hebrews 2 verse 10, for as became in from whom are all things and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons unto glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. There was no imperfection in Jesus when he was born, but there was no experience in him when he was born. And he became an experienced Son of Man through the sufferings. And that's why he lived on this earth for 33 years. Matthew 8, verse 17 says, he himself took our infirmities and he bare our sicknesses. And in Isaiah 53, prophetically, he is the man of sorrows and he is acquainted with every grief. And how literal we need to take that, I will leave it undecided. But I lean towards literalism there. He's been there. He's cried the tears of sorrows. He's felt the pain. He didn't just stand at the bedside of the sick. He laid on the bed of the sick. He didn't just compassionately walk with the lonely. He was the lonely. He didn't just shed tears with the grieving. He was the griever. And that makes Jesus so supremely empathetic. You know, when Jesus is speaking, you notice that he never says anything about himself, except once. Therefore, we know very little about Jesus in his personal appearances. But we know this about him. Matthew 11, he says one thing about himself that I just want to draw your attention to. For I am meek and lowly. As far as I can see, that is the only thing that he ever said about his own personal personhood. I am meek and lowly. What's that mean, meek and lowly? That means he is not judgmental. He is understanding. He's able to get down to our level. He understands where we are. And he is therefore meek. In Hebrews 7, verse 25, there's the word harmless. He is harmless. A beautiful word the Spirit there uses to describe the glory of Jesus. He's harmless. That means he doesn't injure anyone. He never did any wrong. He never said anything wrong. There was no streak of meanness, insensitivity, judgmentalism in this sacred person, Jesus Christ. And that makes him such an eminent high priest. As he stood there in the midst of brokenness, he didn't stand above it. He stood with it. And anyone that seeks his help in all their brokenness and all their neediness and all their vileness and all their struggles and all their depths, you'll never find him distant. You never find him cold. You'll never find him unfeeling. You don't find him a clinical counselor. You'll find him an empathetic counselor. You'll find him knowledgeable about where you are. You find him intimate with yourself. One of those little moments in China, as I'm trying to teach these Chinese brethren, and we're struggling with the Chinese language and with the English language, one of these brothers gave me another one of these revelations about the word intimacy. He couldn't say it English very well. And he said, not intimacy, into me see. That's touching, isn't it? To be intimate with someone is you are allowing the other to into me see. And that's what Jesus is. He is into me, see. He knows what I go through, what I went through, what I may have to go through. He has been tempted with every temptation. He has been acquainted with all griefs. And therefore, he can still, that's quite amazing. He can still be touched with the infirmities, the feeling of my infirmities, even though he is in glory, even though he is beyond suffering, he is beyond all the pain, and still he has a sensitivity as he is in heaven. Why is that? Because he's been here. In some way, having passed 27 years from the moment that I buried Melanie, and having had just recently celebrated 25 years of a beautiful and a rich, blissful second marriage. I have to admit that obviously I am not in the same position or condition that I was then, that I am now. And yet I can empathize, while not in the same condition, with those who were there when I was there. And that's now the beautiful glory of Jesus. He can, even though he's not in that same condition, still be intimate, intimacy, because he's been there. That's empathy. And therefore, he can be filled with a touch and a tenderness. And my friends, what now is one of the primary blessings of going through the journey of grief? What fitted Jesus to be such an able high priest is what fits us to be such an empathetic helper as you and I travel through our journeys of grief. I think I related it in the book that I have written, really, a book that kind of came out of a topic I gave to office bearers originally in the Netherlands. That's why it was printed there first and finally here. It was on the journey from Grand Rapids Seminary at that stage back to Kalamazoo, where my family still lives, that somewhere there along that journey of 131, I prayed a short prayer on the basis of the lesson in seminary that day. We talked about the potter and we explained and explored that whole section about the potter. And being a young greenhorn, I asked, Lord God, Father, thou who art a potter, thus called me to the ministry. Thus called me to minister people that grieve, that suffer, that are in pain, that are wounded, that are abused, that have all kinds of issues, and I'm just so unprepared. Will thou please prepare me for this task in the ministry? Never will I forget that moment. Moments that you don't just pray, but that prayer is given and it pours out of you. And dear friends, it's not a year later that God answers that prayer. As I get a phone call that my wife is diagnosed with brain tumor, third stage brain tumor. You know the first thing I said? I didn't mean that when I asked thee to prepare me for the ministry. But I clearly felt in that moment that God was answering my prayer in a way I had never thought he would. But that moment, I felt already that I was going to lose my wife. That Sunday, my pastor in New Jersey led the Lord's Supper, preached from Genesis 22 about Abraham having to sacrifice his son Isaac. And it was as God reminded me, yes, you will lose Melanie. He took her. He took her. Not cancer, not a brain tumor. He took her. And I know, I ask, as I journey through these 2 years or 2.5 years of her sickness, Lord, fit me through this. Let this pain become a gain, I pray thee. Let me not stop here in this loss, but let this loss become multiplied gain. And that's why I'm standing here before you today. God answered that too. He didn't only take something. He threw the loss and enriched my life. Oh yes, I wish the loss would be returned. And someday I have the hope it will. And I meet her there not more as a wife, but I meet her as my sister in Christ, in the glory beyond. But that loss today is my profit. Empathy. When someone shares with me, even in a few words, what they have lost, obvious, there's connection. The journey of grief, friends, however, is not limited just to losing a spouse or to losing a child or to losing, as we hear tonight, a child before birth. The journey of grief is a journey that is experienced in multiple conditions. The loss of a job, the damaging of your reputation, having to give up a position because of age or of health, a broken marriage, facing the divorce of your parents, a child that comes out of the closet with his or her same-sex attractions and struggles, a split in a church family, children leaving the faith in which you raised them. All that is loss. And all that evokes feelings of grief and sadness and all the other feelings that I've tried to describe in this book. Because it's not just only sadness that we feel. It's not only emptiness that we struggle with. We struggle with guilt. Guilt? Yes. You may struggle with anger. You may struggle with anxiety. You may struggle with futility of life. You may struggle with suicidal thoughts. You may struggle, and on goes the list. And have I had all these? Well, gladly, no. But a number of them. And why do I have to go through all that? Well, doesn't that make us more empathetic and less judgmental? As others around us are going to go through the same journeys of grief and sorrow on stages of their life. And that journey of grief, therefore, can become so enriching when in the valley of this grief you will learn one of the aspects, as I see, empathy. There's, of course, other aspects. There's a multiple amount of aspects that you and I can gain through the process of grief. I will not all speak about them. I was only going to speak about empathy. And this evening, I just indeed encourage you. God can turn your incredible, painful journey into a journey of even more incredible growth. Prophet. One of the things we have to learn, dear friends, God in this life didn't promise only comfort upon comfort upon comfort. The comfort is hereafter. There is comfort in life and death. Of course there is. As we may learn to know and in faith live and share with the grace of God and the power of God and the love of God and the mercies of God, but God's primary purpose in my life is not here to give me comfort. His primary purpose in this life is to conform me to Jesus Christ. And loss is a great facilitator of that. If in my loss and in my grief, I come at the feet of the cross and begin to ask him repeatedly and repeatedly, not, Lord, why did it have to take place to me and why did I have to lose this? Not that way. But Lord, I know thou caused this grief in me not willingly. Thou caused this pain in me not unwillingly. There was something in me or something thou want to do with me that necessitated thee to cause this grief in me. What is it, Lord? What must I learn? What must I unlearn? How have I to grow through this? There were times I didn't want to grow. There were times I didn't want anything to hear of him about what his purpose was because it was so painful. But yes, time and time again, God brought me back to that potter. He doesn't just put his fingers into that clay without a purpose. He wants to make something of this clay. He wants to form it into a vase or a big jar or a something else. But he wants to do something. For our Creator didn't do any creation without purpose. He also doesn't do any providence without any purpose. What is it, Lord? Thou wants me to learn. To make me a more useful instrument in thy hand for the rest of my days on the journey of my life. That's still my prayer. When I have a normal day. When there is a setback, when there is a suffering, when there is a trouble, when there is a frustration, and I fail so often to ask on those days when it is normal, remember, the thorns, the thistles, what dost thou want me to learn of this? That's empathy. That's progress. Empathy is the experiential ability to walk along in someone else's shoes. Empathy is to see life through their eyes. Empathy is to feel their emotions of their sadness, of their confusion, of their fear, of their anxiety, of their anger, of their bitterness, of their guilt, of their hopelessness. And I can tell you that all these words I've gone through at one of the stages of my journey. Empathy is to stand next to that person and walk along in their, no, not in their shoes. You'll never walk in their shoes. You can never walk in their shoes, but at least walk beside them. I was only 17 or 18, I forget, when I started my teacher training in the Netherlands. Back in 1979, I guess, we obeyed our teachers without a question. I don't know if that's always true, but we did it this or that day. He took us to a street four times as busy as the Byron Center Avenue, here beside the church. And he took us to the crosswalk. I'll never forget. 17-year-old. He says, boys and girls, I want you to squat down like this. And I want you to cross the road like that. I felt like an ugly duckling. We all felt a little foolish. Walking across the road, standing by the crosswalk, waiting for the cars and the trucks to stop, and we waggled through that crosswalk across the road. And that teacher said to us afterwards, I didn't want to humiliate you, but I wanted you to be a little humble. Why did I do that to you? He said, you guys all and girls want to be teachers. You can never be a good teacher if you are not on the level of your children. And guess what? That is the level they are at when they cross the street. They cannot look over the car. That truck looks like an elephant. The fears and the anxieties and their feelings you need to know if you will be an effective teacher. I've never forgotten that lesson. Empathy is what he was talking about. And as adults, if we're tall and big, we forget what it feels like to be a kid. And we talk right over their heads. Now, friends, isn't that often how it is? Before I lost my wife, I heard about other people losing their wife. I was here, they were there. I didn't communicate on their level. Oh, I feel so sorry for you. I don't know what I said. So God brought me on their level. That's one of the most beautiful fruits of going through the valley of grief. I will conclude with a wisdom of a man with the name Netherpelt. I've never met him, don't even know who he is, but he wrote something very striking. He says, how often don't have I my opinion ready, even when I was not asked for it? Am I walking in their shoes when I judge how many children a couple can handle, or how a person uses his money, or how someone interacts with another? How often does it come into our minds or in our tongue? Well, if I was her, I would. Or perhaps we would ask, would you do that if? And before we realize it, we again stepped into the shoes of someone else. Get out of their shoes. They don't fit you, literally or figuratively. Your only task is to mainly take care that their shoes feel a little bit more comfortable. Your task is an unprejudiced jumping in when you see someone having a rough time. To do a practical deed, to speak or to not speak, or write an encouraging word, or to pass on a financial gift. Don't expect from each other big deeds. Add a little foot ointment. Help them to put their shoes on again. Add a little arch support. All we need to do is to try that the shoes of our neighbor would slip on a little easier. So that, as the scripture says, we help them to carry their cross with more joy. I'll say that's the purpose of my book. My little book, it's very little. It's not scholarly. I didn't want to write it for the expert. I wanted to write it for my fellow sufferer. And I discovered before my journey started, I was as ignorant could be. Though I had some losses in my life before that, but not anything as big as Melanie. Now, this book is only meant to be a hand to, first of all, those who haven't walked through the valley. You're going to. None of us accept it. We're going to walk through the valley of grief someday. I wanted to share with you some thoughts, some feelings, some struggles, some confusion that you might experience. And I remember sitting next to a mother who, a month before my wife died, lost her oldest son in a car accident. And she said to me, now I said something to her, or I was sharing with them something, and I said, you know, there were times I thought I lost my mind. I was going crazy. And all of a sudden, she burst out in tears. She says, thank you for sharing that. That's all. And then later on, I said to her, Nancy, did you struggle with that too? She says, yes, I thought I was the only one in the world that thought that. I thought that too. I thought I was the only one in the world that was angry with God. Now, mind you, I was a preacher. I had to preach every Sunday when my wife was dying. And there were moments that I stood with my fist. Maybe you didn't, but I did. But I know many others did. But you never dare to share that. I've given in this book a little into me. See. Why? So that I can walk beside you even if I don't never see you. So it's a book that I made myself vulnerable in. And I know I took a risk when I did that. But I did it purposefully. So that we would be a better support person as we walk with other grievers and don't make the same mistakes I made. Or perhaps if you go through the journey, you wouldn't think you're the only one who struggles with that. That's all. That's my only purpose. And I hope that God may richly bless you through it and make you an empathetic fellow sufferer. Thank you, Mons.